You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 169. Welcome for joining us on the live stream. If not, happy Thursday, March 6th. We are officially in March, folks, and we are 2 weeks away from some kind of baseball and 3 weeks away from a full-on opening day. So Steve could not be happier to be here talking about breakout hitters. We spend so much time playing with the puzzle pieces on pitching analysis. Sometimes you forget the good old-fashioned hitter breakouts, and that there's less variables to break down than pitching, but there's still plenty to look into, and some of it's park factor, some of it's just unlocking new things. I think even the bat speed metrics are now interesting that we've got like a full season of that. So cannot wait to get into these. It's been a minute, Steve, but it's good to be back. I know we got drafts rocking and rolling. We could spend an entire episode just talking about what the heck I'm doing over in TGFBI, but that is not what this show is about. We're here to talk breakout hitters, and I can't wait, man. How's it going?
Good. I can't believe you didn't hit us with the this is March.
I always leave that for you, the raunchy.
The John Rothstein.
This is March. Rothstein. That's right.
Yeah. I thought it was Shane. Yeah. All good. I may get on the clock. I may get on the clock in TGFBI. I'm four picks away.
I just grabbed Riley Green. I had a Riley Green nice. Bellinger call, and I was like, man, I got to address outfield. And I was like, you know what, man? I'm dancing.
We're going to talk about him on this show as one of my breakout picks. So there you go. Also in Rad Slam, I'm a few picks away in there. Are you in Rad Slam this year?
Yes, I did sign up. I gotta see what the heck's going on, dude. I've been in the whirlwind. So so did those just start? I haven't gotten
they start today.
Good, thank God. But yeah, we're fully underway. I know. Yeah. I was white knuckling through rain and wind from Indianapolis there for a show, but it's good to be talking baseball, man. It's just like it's a great escape. So
we talk about this all winter long. We can't wait for March. That's our favorite time of year, and it's like honestly the best part, one of the best parts of fantasy baseball. And this is it. We got a nice little schedule up with a bunch of our shows. Did a nice little guest spot just before this, which is a nice little teaser for an episode down the line. So. It's exciting, and I don't know if we've formally done this. I mean, we've breakouts. A new revolutionary topic for a baseball podcast: breakout hitters. But I don't know if we've had a formal. Okay, these are the guys that we think we're going to break out. So it'll be like our picks and our guys sort of month, right? Like we have some breakouts that we want to talk to. We'll do our chalkboard on the day before opening day. So happy to be back weekly. Happy to be drafting. Happy to be in March. Happy for baseball to be back on TV and real games to matter in exactly 2 weeks time.
It's a beautiful thing. And we're talking hitters, Steve. So give us the rundown, give us the format, because we got plenty of names to get through, but just give us the housekeeping on kind of how we're structuring this. I know there's always the linguistics of breakout versus sleeper. Overall, these are guys that we like, right? But talk to me about how we're kind of approaching this, and then we'll jump into some names.
Players that will take a big leap forward is, I think, the general definition. So it can be guys that are taken a little bit early, that, a top 100 pick that ends up being a top two rounder, things like that. Guys that will return excess value and be, picked much higher in drafts next year. Like the names from last year come to mind from all different parts of the draft, right? Like Lawrence Butler, Jackson Merrill, Ketel Marte, Jaron Duran, Ellie, who was a second round pick. I would still consider that a breakout, right? Because you were buying the potential and then he actually broke out and met it. Josh Naylor, Brenton Doyle, who was like, a true sleeper, right? Mm-hmm. Jurickson Profar, another different form of true sleeper, like a veteran who bounced back. Mark Vientos, sort of a post-hype breakout. So they come in all different shapes and sizes. Those are just some of the examples, and those are the type of players that we want to hit on that's the list that we're striving for next year. We're each going to pick three hitters that we pick to break out, and then one deeper one, so a post-pick 200 for the back end of your 12-teamer drafts. for a breakout. So excited to get into it. Had a good process, I feel, this year, and some cool tools that we use that we'll get into. So we'll pass it back over to you for your thoughts.
I love it, man. I'm down to jump in. I mean, we got names, and the first one I'm starting with, I think I misread instructions, Steve, because I ended up going all pick 200 and beyond.
Okay, that's
and
fine.
And you were
that's
like,
fine.
Let's just make sure we have some back there. I mean, I will say, tis the season for names. Prior to pick 200, some of the ones that come to mind that I think are candidates, definite candidates, are Isak Paredes. I think that Jordan Westberg is one that I'm increasingly excited about, just with what we saw of him in a short sample last year. He was one that we were so excited about him when he came up, and then it was kind of lackluster, and I think he was almost the post-hype breakout last year, and it's almost given the Gunnar Henderson vibes a little bit, his own teammate. You add what they're doing with Camden on pulling the fences in, and a little power speed. So Westberg is like my honorable mention, but at the same position, second, which, you know, you need a plan for, but there are some parachutes. A parachute that I love, which I don't think I'll have a hard time convincing you on, Steve, is Brandon Lau for the Rays. And this is a guy that you have to remind yourself is only 30 years old, because it feels like in the landscape of where fantasy is today, it feels like a name that we've been talking about for a decade. But he is, you know, still hanging around ADP 210. And obviously with Steinbrenner, you know, and not playing at the Trop, they have pretty much the equivalent of a Yankee short porch. I think it's like 317 feet in left field. And that is a match made in heaven for Brandon Lau. He still hits the ball hard and barrels it hard. And that is coming from a season where he had an oblique issue, which we know can always be a bit of a power sap. And he still hit 21 homers last year. I put in my little tinfoil hat, Steve, as I do on the Savant video game log, and went to look at Brandon Lau's flyouts that were poolside. And last year he had five. At the Trop, he had five flyouts that would have been a homer in this park. So right away, I mean, it's very rudimentary and just saying, oh, pretend they're at this park. But that would have made his line a 26-homer year. You know, that average at 244 is not going to kill you. And overall, you have to remember that the oblique was there, and that was all in 107 games. So I think there is really legitimate 30-plus home run upside. The average has always been pretty volatile, but I think, you know, somewhere between 235 and 255, and a team that should be generating some offense in that ballpark. So I think Lau is a very interesting one that you honestly, the helium, I think, will continue to grow on this, but I think there's room. I think at 210, I'm pretty excited about it. So that's my first one. I know you've loved Lau in the past, but what do you think? Are you planning on getting any shares?
I have. I think it's a good second base option. I think I have a share or two on the few drafts that I've completed. I don't question anything what you said. I think the ballpark context and just getting out of the Trop is a big win for Tampa Bay Ray hitters. Couple that with the fact that it's now Yankee Stadium dimensions. It's the exact dimensions as Yankee Stadium at the stadium they're going to play in. So, you know, Tampa, the Trop has been known to, you know, not be a great place to hit just because of the lighting. It's also indoors, right, and boosts right up pitchers' movements. And, you know, it's an ideal condition inside. So balls move more and stuff. Plus is actually boosted there. So just getting away from that is a huge win, and then going to a place that's friendly for left-handed hitters, that's great. The question is outside in the humidity in Tampa, like that ball, like look at what Vlad did in Dunedin and Dunedin for you know, that year that they played there after the COVID year for the Blue Jays. So playing outside in Florida is going to be good for hitters. It's just a matter of if Lau could stay healthy. Like he hasn't played more than 110 games since 2021 when he played 149, But when he played 149, he popped 39 homers. So, you know, if you get anywhere close to like 140, 150 games, you're going to be approaching 30 homers from your second baseman. Sure, the average is going to be, I think, max 250. But that's not really going to matter if you get a 30 homer second baseman. So I like it. I think it's a good sort of, you know, maybe of the Jerks and Profar sort of forgotten old veteran, you know, injury prone guy that we don't trust breakout. So I think it's a good choice though.
Nice. Okay. Well, yeah. And I mean, we've seen the ceiling, you really have to squint and like put it all together, but he's flat. I mean, that 2021 year where he had 39 homers, like you said, the 2 years prior to that, his average was 270 and 269. And I know that we're not, those days are long gone, but it just makes you wonder, like you said, like an aging breakout season that I would not be shocked by. I think it would be more like, oh, why didn't we gobble up shares all through draft season? This was right in front of us. So yeah, Lau's a good one to start it off, but why don't you hit us with one of your first here?
All right, this is a guy that I've talked about seemingly all winter, all last year, even maybe the year before that. But my first pick is Kerry Carpenter to be a breakout hitter. He's going at ADP 190. I think he's being drafted as, you know, a third or fourth outfielder, and I think he's being drafted as someone that will fully platoon, right? He hasn't been good versus lefties. That's absolutely true. He barely played versus them last year. I think he only got like 20 or so plate appearances. You know, part of that was due to the fact that he missed about 2 months with a back injury. So, you know, I think part of the reason why he didn't get he got even less at-bats versus lefties last year. It's, hey, you know, this guy's coming back from a bad back injury. Whenever there's a lefty, it's an easy chance for him to sit. That being said, I think there is some signs of life for Kerry Carpenter to hold his own versus lefties. Cody Stavenhagen of The Athletic already said that, you know, a few weeks ago when spring training opened, that Carpenter could see more time potentially versus lefties. He had a 902 OPS versus lefties in 2022 in the minors. You know, and his career numbers versus lefties as far as strikeout rate are a bit encouraging. It's only 24%. You know, it's not something that screams this is absolutely unplayable, right? Like you know, there's signs that Carpenter could potentially be someone that is playable because he has you know, that ability to adjust and hold his own and isn't up there striking out 40% of the time like mm-hmm. like some other hitters do that make it a strict platoon. He had a 90 WRC plus in his largest sample versus lefties in 2023. What I have up on the screen that you'll see on our stream is his rolling process plus. Yes, it's a small sample, but I think it just illustrates the fact that, you know, he made above average contact for most of the year versus lefties. He had above average power. You know, his decisions weren't the best, but they were for the most part above average. So that tells me that Kerry Carpenter is not a player that needs to be strictly platooned. And honestly, what he does versus righties provides such an amazing floor, right? His career OPS versus righties is 897. You know, that's top of the league hitter stuff, and that's 2/3 of his at bats. You know, when you know, on a per plate appearance basis, like he's a 30 homer, 280 hitter. You know, if he gets a full year, right? He had 20 homers in 120 games in 2023. He had 18 homers in 87 games last year. So if he stays healthy, even if he does sit versus more righties,
yeah,
he's, you know, I think you could project him for 30 homers and a good average, right? Like all of the projections have him for, you know, 250, 255, but he doesn't strike out that much. He has a much better approach in two strikes accounts. He makes much more contact in two strike counts. So I just see a ton of upside with Kerry Carpenter, and I think that, you know, he's just being priced as if he's going to sit versus lefties, and I think, you know, he may get more playing time, and even if he does, it's still going to be pretty valuable, and there's room for a breakout.
Yeah, I love it, Steve. I think that we always tell ourselves in October to not give up on our first gut instincts once the industry kind of grinds it out of us with groupthink and everything. And Carpenter is so, so good and has been that I think what you said at the end there, that it comes down to health, and then anything is gravy that you get from them doing the platoon split thing. It is a little bit nervy that he's had two of the same back issues
sure.
in the past
yeah,
couple
that's
of years.
Good point. That's a good point.
And he hits the hell out of the ball, so it's like maybe, the, you know, to some extent, it's like, you know, is that part of how he is as
like
an
a Tyler
athlete?
O'Neill, is this guy too strong for his own good type
yeah,
of thing?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, gosh, even like his photo just looks like he's like about to snap the bat with yeah. his hands. So. Yeah, I think, I have in my only completed draft so far, I have Carpenter. So I am bought in on this. And age 27, the Tigers have so much good energy right now with like the clubhouse and the way they're talking.
The batted ball data, 17% barrel rate last year, 45% hard hit. Like this guy just mashes the ball and doesn't strike out 30% of the time. Like he strikes out 25%, which sure, that's a little bit elevated, but you know, with how hard you hit the ball, that's going to be a player that hits a ton of home runs and still can hit for a good average.
Mm-hmm. No, I like it a lot. So Carpenter, I am in on for sure. Like I said, I'm planning on having a high share percentage on Kerry Carpenter throughout the year. Okay, getting to my second one here. I am going to go with, let's go ADP 220. We're going with Ivan Herrera. And this, you know, it's been hard being a Cardinals fan, Steve, which hasn't been the case most of my life. But this is one that I kind of had heard and my ears perked up. Obviously, with them moving William Contreras to first base, that's exciting for Contreras in and of itself. But the market is totally caught up with that. Ivan Herrera is an interesting one because of the opportunity that he is going to get. And hopefully that is not every day, but as every day as catcher workload gets. His own process plus looks great. And this was a shout out to Kevin O'Brien, who did a pitcher list article that was five hitters that PLV loves. And Ivan Herrera is on there, and his process plus just shows the level of power that he brings that I don't think people are paying much attention to. Not the best decisions, but contact and power, very good, which from a catcher, you know, it goes back to what Chris Towers was saying of the Seinfeld, like the food was bad and the portions were small. Like you'll take anything at catcher. And what we saw from Herrera last year was good. It even offered some speed as well. So yeah, I think like this guy has a good hit tool. It's been small sample sizes, but we've seen in 72 games last year, he hit 300, had five homers, five steals. You know, it's like just having that hit tool and the power seems like it has some potential to take a step forward. I know Bush is a nightmare in terms of power, but, you know, playing some games in Cincinnati, some games in Milwaukee, like I think I'm not sure what the ultimate stat line would be, but catcher, the bar is so low, mm-hmm. and he's one who has a positive opportunity, a positive skill set, and I think kind of an underrated power aspect that is demonstrated in those PLV charts to where, yeah, I'm very interested in Herrera as like a second catcher in two catcher leagues, and it's probably what I'll be doing in a couple of these drafts is just queuing him up and taking the leap at 220. So, yeah, that's my pitch on Herrera. Curious, he's a name we haven't talked about, if you're interested.
this is a Casey Bubba special. Whenever Wilson Contreras went down, Casey Bubba last year was touting, you know, to make sure that you scooped Ivan Herrera, and was excited for any time that he got opportunity. And I mean, in the small sample, he was proven right. Like, you know, he was valuable in those 72 games, right? Like a 300 average, with 5 homers, 5 steals, 800 OPS for a catcher. That is really good stuff. And, you know, there's enough there for the Cardinals to move, you know, someone off catcher that they just signed to a contract to play there for, what, 5 years? That was now 2 off seasons ago. Mm-hmm. And I think part of the reason why they're comfortable doing that, you know, Contreras' defensive faults aside, is the fact that they have another good bat that they can slide in there in Ivan Herrera. So I think this is a great call. I do have him a share as a catcher too. I know that there's some question as to whether he actually does fully have the job. I think who else is there? Is it Pedro Páez, yeah, who's a really good, behind the plate and has some good defensive values. But I think I'm buying, the fact that they're going to give Herrera this job for his bat just because the lineup needs it, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, they need another good bat there, and Herrera could be a plus value at the catcher position. So I think it's a great call, and could see him definitely being a guy that would go from, you know, someone who's being drafted as a catcher 2 this year to catcher 1 next year.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, it's a good point that the Cardinals do tinker, and they have a history of kind of game management and pairing up a catcher with a pitcher and stuff like that. And, you know, obviously the legacy of Yachty. So Páez will get some games, but I feel like that's almost any catcher, right? It's like you're going to get 4 out of 5 at best games from them just because it's such a grueling position to be in regardless. So as long as it's like 3 out of 4, I think you're still going to get some value there because the bat is real. So yeah, hit me with your second here, Steve.
Yeah, this one is about as chalk as you can go for a breakout pick, and it's probably going to be the most popular breakout pick, but I still can't help myself. I'm all in on the hype on Junior Caminero. Currently going at ADP 76 and climbing. I don't think you'll be able to get him there for much longer. Basically, as every day goes on, his price is going to go up. But I view Junior Caminero as sort of this year's Gunner, you know, 2023 Corbin Carroll, a guy with limited track record that's going to go in, you know, the 5th, 6th round, maybe even a little bit higher as we get into draft season proper, where you're taking a bit of a risk, but I think it's going to pay off, despite the lack of a sample size. Like, everything as far as the bad ball data is just so impressive. And you have to keep in mind that Caminero did this as a 21-year-old for the most part. Started the year as a 20-year-old. He's 21 and 8 months now, so he's not going to be, 22 until, I don't know, what's 4 months from now?
Yeah,
August July. Or July. So, yeah, the absolutely insane 12% barrel rate, 46% hard hit rate, a 116 max EV at the major league level. That was higher in the minors. He had the ball 117 in the minors last year. Like, I saw a great comp. I forgot. I think Chris Towers put it out in his newsletter as he wrote up Caminero for a breakout pick. Like, this could be like a Marcelo Zuna type of stat line. Guy that doesn't strike out that much, 20% strikeout rate last year, had lower strikeout rates in the minors, so has the propensity to improve as he repeats the MLB level for the second time next year. So I could see, a true 4-category offensive stud here at a position that, is sneak. It's not second base where it's that bad, but third base is pretty rough after the top. So I think we're sitting on a superstar in waiting here. And, it's cliche, but I think that, this will be the latest you'll be able to draft Caminero in any fantasy draft for a long, long time. That's just how good he is at such a young age.
Yeah, no, it's the stock is rising fast with all the three homers in spring training and
the Dominican League, homers that,
like,
and yeah,
that was like at a crucial, was yeah. that like the final or something yeah. like that? Yeah,
yeah.
But I think the only thing is just the tax, and this is happening. Speaking of the CBS guys, I heard Scott White say something that like stuck with me, and I think it's so true that it's like everything is so accessible and the industry has become so dialed into the underlying metrics and the stats that like kind of gone are the days where you can truly get a ton of value by being smarter than the industry because everyone is so on the ball. So, like, you almost have to approach. I think the way he had talked about it is like his draft strategy has become like get your value from what falls to you in drafts because mm-hmm. you're not going to cheat ADP that much. And I think it just has a way of working itself out now where, and some of the hype goes too far. Some people get slept on, or things like, you know, we just talked about it in our chalkboard preview that'll be coming out in a couple weeks that. Yes, the industry might miss stuff, but it's so small. And Caminero at this ADP, you're really signing up for something that has to be stud level right away. I mean, this is a 6-round pick. So I think for it to be a value or a breakout at this price, you almost need it to be that Gunnar Henderson or Vlad ascent to the top. But all of the raw skills look so enticing that you almost wonder like how could it not, and especially when you add in the Florida humidity and all that stuff. So like I guess what's the risk, like is there anything to point to that
I mean we're the risk about is that you know he's such a young player that you know potentially if it does spiral early that he's back in the minors, right? That's the risk.
Yeah.
And you know it's not did they sign Caminero to like? Does he have like a Jackson Churio deal? Did they sign him already? I think they might have.
I don't know
if that's the case. No. Options going through ARB, all that. So it's not like part of the reason why Churio last year was I think a bit of a safer play is that they signed him to that deal and like you know they're ready to play him essentially, mm-hmm. right? Like they extended him and, you know, bought out his ARP years and everything like that. But that said, the just batted ball data for Caminero is just so, so good that I find it hard to envision something going that poorly for him. I think he's just to be an elite hitter.
What was his hit tool in the minors? Cause that's the only thing is like the batting average question, and everyone spent so much time this season talking about how you need to establish that as like a solid floor.
I mean, Fangraphs had a 35-50, so 35 present, future 50 hit grade on him. But, I mean, you know, he never hit lower than essentially 299 at any stop in the minors. Yeah. You know. So
his projections, yeah, like ATC has him at 263, which is like neutral, if not good.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And a lot of that's probably based on batting on his, you know, 248 sample from last year, which was, you know, a bit underwhelming for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think that, you know, with how hard he hits the ball, I could easily see him running BABIPs much better than 289, right, with a 46% hard hit rate and a 12% power rate. I think those numbers are only going to improve.
It's probably the most exciting bat in the top 100 in terms of like the price and the stock and everything. It's just I think because of that you're getting like the sizzle tax, but I'm with you, man. I think it's good to call out, like, you know, what are we doing on this show if we can't talk about a junior Caminero when it comes to being a breakout hitter? But I will be curious if I end up with any shares just because I do feel like it's, well, for one, that's a great area to also attack pitching. But for two, you are like his projections wouldn't quite get him to.
No, that. He needs to outpace his projections for sure.
Yeah. And that, like, the biggest one playing time wise has him at 25 homers. But I think that's what we're talking about.
I'm buying oopsie. Like, you know, that has the bat speed input. I'm buying okay, that the oopsie has projection 31 homers, 273.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So nice. I think like that's more what you're dreaming on. Yeah, yep. I love it. The dream. Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll keep it rolling on breakout hitters, but we're going to take our first ad break. We'll be right back after this. Okay, so, yeah, we talked about Brandon Lau. We talked about Kerry Carpenter. You hit on Junior Caminero. I hit on Ivan Herrera. It's back to me, and I am going back to some ballpark dimensions. A way less sexy name than Junior Caminero. Talking about Ryan Mountcastle, which... there's some irony here, Steve, because someone in my home league kept him, and I kind of laughed about, like, oh, man, like, enjoy keeping Mountcastle. And he's another guy like Lau that it feels like we've known him for so long and that it's over. Like, the book is out, and it's like, oh, yeah, remember when we thought he was going to be something substantial? He's still 28 years old. The bat speed is 90th percentile. The hard hit rate was 74th percentile last year. The hit tool itself, we're looking at 2 years in a row where it's been 270. It's a fantastic offense, and he did, you know, what he did last year with while dealing with injury. He had a left wrist sprain, and you had the cavernous Camden, and now they're pulling the walls in. So I did the similar little exercise going down the rabbit hole, and just in general, Ryan Mountcastle had 17 outs last year from balls that went 350 feet or longer. So that some of that is just straight up unlucky. But in terms of what was at Camden, there were 7 outs at Camden that went 360 feet or deeper. They are pulling those walls in as much as like 27 feet in certain areas. So a lot of those would have been home runs. You need health here. It's not... again, it's not one that's going to like soar up and be like a top 50 guy, but it does feel like a lot of things are kind of like working in Mountcastle's favor to put together a year that could easily be like 25 homers, 270 average. The RBIs and runs will like work themselves out naturally. One thing I don't have right in front of me is his spot in the lineup. Because is he like fifth or sixth hitter?
Right now, according to Roster Resource, he is in the 8th hole. But, you know, I think things like that could change, especially versus lefties. He'll be further up in the lineup. I would see him switching spots, at least in the lineup, with, like, Colton Cowser. Mm-hmm. Cedric Mullins won't be in the lineup versus lefties either. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's just one that, again, I think we're quick to kind of move on from these guys. And I think there's... enough of the skills in the story here, and he has to stay healthy, which he hasn't been able to do for a couple of years. But yeah, I mean, again, going back to 2021, just like Lau, he had a 33 homer season. So like that is in there for Mountcastle, and it's great exposure to that lineup, and it does not cost much at all in terms of the ADP, which is at, 222. So that's Ryan Mountcastle, a little bit more of a boring one, but one that I think is worth considering for like a corner infield.
Another guy that, you know, just a few years ago hit 30 home runs. So, exactly. You know, I think that he was probably the player that was affected most by Mount Baltimore. So
yeah.
I'm sure he's probably one of the happiest people to see that wall coming back in.
Yep. All right, Steve, give us another one. Where are we at?
All right. Another guy that I've seemingly hyped up all offseason, and it's Kerry Carpenter's teammate, Riley Green. He's currently going at ADP 100. I know you just took him in TGFBI.
Yes, sir.
I am just a Riley Green stan. I absolutely love everything that Riley Green does. From just a plate approach perspective, if you're watching on the stream, you could see his rolling process plus stats. And it's just, you know, essentially for other than a dip in, you know, contact rate in September, Riley Green does everything well. And I think there is some room for improvement, especially in that strikeout rate for Riley Green. But, you know, his Statcast page pops up bright red across the board. You know, barrel rate, hard hit, absolutely everything that you want to see for someone that, you know, is still super young. He's just 24, right? And he's done this for parts of the last three seasons now, as far as, you know, hit the ball hard, barrel the ball, do the things that all the things that you want to do from a quality of contact percentage, has steadily improved that, right, too. From 2022 was a 9.3% barrel rate, which was great. You know, that's impressive in his rookie year, even though, you know, it only translated to 5 home runs in 93 games. Then in 2023, in another 99 games, he had an 11.3% barrel rate. Again, a little bit disappointing in the fact that he only hit 11 home runs. Last year, 13.4% barrel rate translated into 24 homers in 137 games. You know, I still think there's, you know, some batting average upside for him. I think he can come down on that K rate just because he has such a good sense of the zone. He doesn't chase. There is some swing and miss, and that's going to come with someone that, you know, swings the bat as hard as he does and has as much power as he does. But, yeah, man, I just think Riley Green is becoming one of the better all-around hitters in the league. I think my comp for him is the 90th percentile outcome is like prime Freddie Freeman. That's what I think he looks like. I think he looks like a 30 homer, 300 hitter. And I'm betting on that strikeout rate to improve like Freddie Freeman's did. Like Freddie Freeman had, you know, back when he came into the league in 2011, 2012, you know, 25, 22% strikeout rates, which don't sound like much now, but, you know, 10, 15 years ago, those were pretty high strikeout rates. And right. he steadily improved those over the course of the year to become this, you know, amazing hitter. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, that's a pretty lofty comp, and, you know, Freddie Freeman seems like he could be potentially a Hall of Fame hitter. But Riley Green does have those tools. Like, I think he is that good of a hitter, just all across the board. It's rare to have that raw power with, like, you know, his approach and, you know, the fact that he doesn't chase and basically does absolutely everything well. Like, a lot of times with these, like, you know, outfielder two that you draft, like, right, like, you'll see the amazing barrel rate, but then, like, the sweet spot will be low, so he hits too many ground balls, you know, or, you know, the bat speed won't be exactly where you want it to be, or the barrel rate is a little bit lower. Not for Carpenter. Like, all he does all of those Green. Things well.
Yeah.
Yep. And just needs to cut down a little bit on that swing and miss, and I think he could. I think he's that good of a hitter.
Yeah, I think the hit tool part, just like the square up contact rates, like on his squared up next to his bat speed, some of the names around him. Well, I guess like there's like a Michael Harris right there. Like, I think for him to, because the power, he missed 23 games mm-hmm. last year and he still had the 24 homers. So I think that it's not as far away as it looks for 30 homer. The question is just for that, like Freddie Freeman comp is, Can he do that and be like a 285 guy? And if he can, then you're very much setting yourself apart, because 285, 30 homer guys, like, don't grow on trees.
Those are first rounders.
Yeah. First rounders. So especially with the kind of burgeoning offense there in Detroit. So, yeah, I like it. And I told you, I mean, I'm on the record. I stand behind it that I am not in love with outfield this year. So I think he's one that I feel great about as an outfield too. And as I just did in TGFBI, I was willing to trust him as my outfield one, even though that was a little bit of a helter skelter type of situation. But I looked at him right next to Cody Bellinger, and despite all the park factors, for Bellinger, I'm excited about Green. And you've swung me on that, Steve. So, love that one. Riley Green. We got more names coming up here, but we're going to take our second ad break and we'll be right back after this. Okay, so Steve, going with the theme I was talking about earlier, that we cannot let our October gut instincts fall by the wayside just from the industry. And I'm not giving up on Tyler Fitzgerald and the breakout potential. Now, I've gotten burned in the past on back of the baseball card stuff and what we saw from him last year with the 15 homers, 17 steals in 96 games. Yes, it came during one of the more unreal, what was it, like 7 homers in 8 games stretch in August, where it felt like every time you opened your Instagram, you were seeing a Tyler Fitzgerald home run. I get that that is not sustainable, but I also still just really think that he is the type of hitter that dupes so many of the things that the industry looks at. His Savant page does not light up. The sweet spot is great, but the barrel rate is like passable. But a lot of the other stuff is just like, okay, how is he getting these homers? Was it a complete fluke, especially with the ballpark in San Francisco? All of that I understand is unconventional, but to me it would be even more of an outlier to say, has he gotten as lucky as he just got at every stop of the minors? Because for you to find a time when he did not have an ISO over 200, you have to go all the way back to 2022. I think he is the type that just kind of knows how to get the most out of his pulled fly balls. Both his fly ball rate and his pull rate are very high on league leaders. It's kind of that Isak Paredes thing. And I say all this about Fitzgerald just to talk about his pop potential. And if he can get to even high teens or 20 home runs, I think the other thing we overlook with Fitzgerald is the fact that his sprint speed is literally to the decimal as fast as Ellie De La Cruz. Like, we do not think about Tyler Fitzgerald. I don't know if it's just because his name feels like it came out of a random generator, but we don't view him as one of the biggest burners in the league in terms of speed. And he had the 17 steals last year. His plate discipline sucks. Let's get that out of the way. The floor here is that he gets sent down. But they have a plan, even with Adames there, for Fitzgerald to be at second base and try him out there. And if that strikeout rate can just be passable at like 27, 28, 29, I think this is kind of like a young Arozarena type of mold where, like, yeah, you're going to have to live with a 240. It won't be the 280 he hit last year. Maybe it's a 230, whatever, because if he gets the 140, 150 games, I think there's a real shot that this is like a 20, 25, maybe even a 20, 30 guy in Fitzgerald that ADP-wise is all the way at 245. So, yes, it's a scratch-off, but I think there's so much to be excited about, and I just have a hard time believing his pop has been luck for 3.5 years running. So, that's my pitch on Fitzgerald. Didn't get him in my draft I completed. But yeah, I've got to walk away with shares because I'm kind of planting a flag that there's something here.
I think we've talked about this before, but you are the only person I know that's like in on Fitzgerald.
I like being,
you know,
contrarian.
He has been like the most obvious fade for everyone. Like, you know, just because he's moved off shortstop, the strikeout rate, nobody buys the 15 homers and 280 average in the limited sample, and you know, the projections don't buy it either, right? They think he's much more of like a 15 homer in a full season, 230 average type of guy. But I think you're onto something. I have 2 shares. He's in 2 of my 5 completed teams so far, so I'm with you.
Nice. Nice.
I think it's a great opportunity to get some power and speed exposure later on in the draft at middle infield that, you know, definitely dries up at that point. So I'm with you. I think
cautiously.
Yes. There's definitely some flaws in the game, right? Like, he's going to swing and miss a ton, but I think the pull power is being overlooked because of the ballpark, because of, you know, the low barrel rate, you know. The bat speed isn't amazing, right? But I think that there is something here in how he's what he's able to do, right? And you mentioned that ISO in the minors, right? Like it's they've all been good ISOs, like right. There's clear power there, and a lot of times that power manifests itself through speed, right? Which isn't necessarily good, but I don't think that's the case with Fitzgerald because he's popped 19 or more homers four separate times in the minors, which, you know, 19 homers in 103 games in single A in 2021, 21 homers in double A in 125 games. Like, those are good numbers. I know PCL too, right? Like, you know, he's been in the San Francisco system. So, sure, maybe there's some elevated aspect there, but there is clear homer power here.
It reminds me of when guys who had big homer outputs who didn't have bright red savant pages in the past, Jose Altuve, Isak Paredes, Chris Bryant, Marcus Semien, Bregman, those guys were all, especially Bryant, Semien, Bregman, those guys were all those pole guys. And to just put the stats on it, his ground ball to fly ball rate, he doesn't hit ground balls, his ground ball to fly ball rate in the majors would be 15th overall. That's above names like Lindor, Matt Olson, Shohei Ohtani, Christian Walker. And in terms of his pull rate, so again, you're getting fly balls, you're also wanting to get pulls, his pull rate would have been 12th in the majors. So like he's doing those two things that basically trick all the savant sliders. And yeah, the ballpark is not ideal. Like if he was in like Houston, I would be even more excited, obviously. But overall, I just think at 245, if you got somebody's with Ellie's speed and the chance at 20 homers, like you don't need to go beyond that just for the dart throw. So that's Fitzgerald. I'm glad to hear you got some shares, Steve. If nothing else, this will be a fun one to watch. And if he crashes and burns, you will not let me hear the end of it. And I can't wait. It would not be the first time. So
I'm hoping that's not the case. I'm in with you, man.
Yeah. Hopefully this is not the hitter version of Humberto Castellanos, the boldest call I've ever had on Wins Above Fantasy. Okay, back to you, Steve. What do we got next?
All right, my last one. I did a little bit of a later pick to make sure I got some deeper value there. It's Lars Nootbaar, currently at ADP 261. Mm-hmm. And the process for me finding this, you know, and picking Lars Nootbaar as a breakout hitter for seemingly what is the fifth year in a row,
right,
is an amazing comprehensive worksheet put together by athletic commenter Ben S. on Eno Saris's breakout hitter article, which we talked about last year, as an inspiration for this episode, where every year Eno looks at, you know, some process stats and some batted ball stats as far as, you know, chase minus zone swing rate to give, you know, a metric as far as how a hitter can sense the zone, strikeout rate to judge contact, hard hit rate to judge how hard you hit the ball, and max exit velocity to get sort of a peak power estimate. And it led to, you know, some hitters like Elly De La Cruz last year, you know, guys like Francisco Alvarez, who, you know, I know was hurt but still, you know, looks pretty good there. It led to Riley Green the year before, I believe. And, you know, this year, guys like Junior Caminero are on it. But, you know, what was amazing about that Google Doc that Ben S. created is he created sort of a metric basically comparing all of those process stats that Eno looks at and compared it to league average and made essentially a hit plus tool, right? So he weighed walk percentage, swing percentage, max exit velocity, barrel percentage, hard hit, and then, you know, the chase rates and overall contacts rates, and aggregated it together and put it on a 100 scale where, you know, 100 is average and, you know, 110 is a standard deviation, is essentially above you know, above average. So, you know, it's not foolproof, but the top of the list is Aaron Judge, Juan Soto, Shohei Ohtani, Vlad Guerrero, Ketel Marte, Yordan Alvarez. So, yes, it's a good list. It worked. The next guy on that list, the eighth hitter, Lars Nootbaar.
Mm.
So there's a lot to like about Lars Nootbaar's process stats. The only thing that's a bit concerning is, you know, the fact that he doesn't swing that much. which I think, you know, you could still get by, but even more so is the ground ball rate. He's had ground ball rates above 50% the last 2 years. If he can just learn how to put, you know, a few more balls in the air, talking 5% more balls, fly balls versus ground balls, I think we're sitting, you're sitting on a guy that potentially could be, you know, a top two outfield, top one outfielder, with how good his quality contact.
OF2, OF1 type thing. Yeah. There's a narrative to go with this too, Steve, that Newt Barr last off season was working one-on-one with Nolan Arenado to work on pulling and like hitting pull line drives, pull, like everything that Arenado made a whole career off of. So pretty good teacher. And when Newt Barr hurt his oblique, he basically in an interview came out and said, I moved away from any of the stuff I had been working on because I kind of just reverted to what I always knew. Like he was in a way just kind of pushing through this injury. And he said he got away from the routine of trying to do the things he worked on and talked about it this offseason that he really wants to get back to what he was excited, the changes he was excited about last year that got derailed from injury. So take that for what it's worth. But I think it's always nice when you hear people addressing things that we are hoping for, right? And it's like when a pitcher says, and you know, I got to work on my secondaries, and it's what all the data says. So that's encouraging for Newt Barr. I think he's kind of a fantasy player, certainly for a points league, no question, like a fantasy player that you would build in a factory in terms of like the hard hit rates and the plate discipline and all that stuff. But yeah, like you said, the ground ball rate is an issue. Team context, not great. Ballpark context, not great. But did you mention the ADP? Because one thing that's different about this year, yeah, ADP 261. Yeah. That's the nice part. Is
he was priced in as a breakout every year heading into this year just because of that. It's finally like, all right, like they've, we don't believe it. Yeah, yeah.
That's right. Everybody's so collectively burnt out. So, yeah, I think it's a good one. And it's like, overall for Newt Barr, what's the age as well? Is it like 24?
He is maybe 27. He's 27. So, yeah, I think he got a little. Was he a college guy? Yeah, he went to USC, so a little bit later of a start. But he, I just want to see him relative to outfielders where he's going. I know it's 260 overall. I want to see where he is. The 65th outfielder. So he's going around like TJ Friedel, Michael Conforto, Evan Carter, Matt Wallner.
Cool names. Yeah,
like,
those
are flyers, but I don't know if a lot of the, like, you know, not many of those guys have demonstrated the batted ball skills that Newt Barr has. And, you know, it's a big ask, one, to stay healthy, two, for him to, you know, change those ground ball, fly ball tendencies. Mm-hmm. You know, there are a lot of guys that can hit the ball really hard, but just can't make that final step to get in the ball in the air enough for it to be useful. But I'm still in and think that, you know, there's something in here that there's too many things that Lars Newt Barr does right that I think eventually maybe it will click. Yeah. I don't know. I know at some points last year you were saying, you know, it's got to be at a different organization because that's when all Cardinal outfielders break out. Not to just jab at you there, but it seems to be the case. But
I like it in a vacuum. I do. I will say that I'm excited about Conforto. I know it's been a little frosty at the spring training, but like you can't get a better team context there. I know he had there was a tweet out that he like, you know, he roped a double off of a slider, and last year he was 0-16 against sliders that were across the plate, and that's you know, the Dodgers know what they're doing. Friedel is a really interesting one because 2 years back he had 18 homers, 27 steals, and hit .279. And with Cincy, I think you would take Cincy over St. Louis any day. Last year it was way worse for Friedel, but he had the year from hell. Like he had a thumb fracture, a hamstring strain, a wrist fracture, and battled through all of that and still had 13 homers and 9 steals. So I think Friedel is kind of interesting and another one who doesn't strike out like Newt Barr. So next to some of those names, it's harder for me to be like, I just don't know, like, is the likely outcome for Newt Barr, like, you know, 18, 19 homers, 10 steals, a lot of walks, and like 260. I think Friedel kind of matches up to like a 5x5 a lot better than Newt Barr, but he hits the ball so well. It's like, we've just never seen it. Like, I don't know what, when you look at what he's actually done, what's the ceiling ever looked like?
We haven't seen it. We really haven't seen it. I mean,
so that's the hard part. Seen it.
I mean, but maybe the 14 homers in the 347 plate appearances in 2022, but that came with a really low batting average, you know, with some bad BABIP luck. 2023 was encouraging too. The 14 homers, 11 steals. That's what led to him being, you know, a breakup pick and a sleeper last year in that inflated draft price, and it kind of came cratering down.
I think that summer Newt Barr, when everybody started going nuts ahead of the WBC and everything, that July, August, July was a 1030 OPS and August was a 979. Mm-hmm. So that is the stretch. So that's fair. Like, we did see it, that heater. So yeah, it's an interesting one, but and it's discounted this year. I think no matter what, I think I'm discovering that I like that ADP 250.
There's some outfielders, There's some outfielders for you,
yeah. I know. I'm slowly warming up to it. All right. Well, yeah, I think that rounds us out for hitter breakouts. Great list, and one that hopefully we can come back.
Did you want to hit on Conforto? I know you had him on your list here too.
I mean, we mentioned him. I just think, you know, some of the stuff with Conforto is just that, like, the Dodgers with what they're building and how they're spending, they theoretically could have brought in anyone that they wanted, right? And it's like, I think I just trust them so much as an organization that they've seen what he's done, and some of his stuff looks, I mean, the barrel rate still looks good. The hit tool has looked like there's signs of improvement year over year. Like, his XBA in 2023 was 245. Last year it was 257. The chase rate is good. Like, we've always kind of liked that. You know, there's always been a case to be made for Conforto. It was just like, oh, well, yeah, you're squinting, but it's also with the Mets before they were really clicking. And then it was with the Giants, which is the worst place to hit. Now you go to the Dodgers with that, the way they can develop players, the way that they kind of see things and work on things, obviously the lineup context. Like, it's easy for me to just see Conforto as the next version of what they pretty much just did with Teoscar. I know that it's quite a step down from that, but I'm excited for it as kind of like a late guy that can get you 25 plus homers, if not more than that, and not kill you in batting average. And the counting stats should be awesome no matter where he's at in the lineup. Like, right now on roster resource, he's at seventh. But, you know, the names in front of him, Teoscar, Muncy, Will Smith, like, that seems like a slot that he could, you know, flirt with like 85 RBIs, maybe more. And that late in the draft, there's a lot of value there. So I like Conforto, but I like some of those other names too. I like Friedel in that area too. So, I don't know if you got anything to add on that.
Here's a real deep outfielder, potential sleeper breakout. Alan Rodon for the Blue Jays is raking in spring training. In his 13 plate appearances, he's got 1240 OPS. Last year had 16 homers, 14 steals at across Double A AA and Triple A. Just a guy that seemingly looks like the Blue Jays are going to give a shot. That's super interesting. Interesting there.
I have not looked at him. Let's get in there for a second. So, yeah, 50 hit tool, 45 raw power, 40 speed. What was minors last year? 125 games, 16 homers, 14 steals, 293. Interesting.
Yeah, and low K rates, good power numbers, some speed. So, the Blue Jays sort of need to find, you know, these sort of hidden gems, right? Mm-hmm. It seems, especially if they're going for it with one last time with Vlad and Bo. Mm-hmm. So who knows? Maybe it's just spring trading nothingness. Maybe it's the sign of a breakout to come.
Maybe it's something. All right, guys. Well, that wraps us up for breakout hitters. We're going to be doing pitchers next. So hopefully you guys enjoyed this. Thanks for everybody who tuned in, leaving some comments on the stream. And for those of you guys listening on the podcast, again, we are on the weekly setup from here on in. So we are pumped. And to anybody who's kind of kicking off with drafts, happy draft season. And otherwise, we'll be back next week. But for episode 169, that's it for Breakout Hitters. Thanks for talking baseball with us.
Thanks, guys. Later.